So it's so great to hear from all of you. Thank you all for, even in spite of all noise and how difficult it is, there's so many of us on the line that it's so great. I don't know how all of you feel, but I know that when I hear your voices and I hear all the different places that you're calling from all over the world, I feel inspired, excited, and so grateful to have you all here. My name again is Chris Atwood. I'm the features editor with Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise magazine. We'll begin our Passion Series interview in about 1 minute. But as we begin, I want to just remind all of you the reason that we have these calls called the Passions of Real Life Legends is so that each one of us, each one of you who is listening on the phone, can be reminded that of how special you are, how unique you are. Each one of you has unique gifts which only you can give. And the whole purpose of these calls is to help you, each one of us, to be able to connect with those unique gifts that we have and be able to give them and share them with the world so that all of us benefit. Because when you are living your passions, when you're aligned with your own personal destiny, then things will show up in your life and in the world which never otherwise would have been available. In fact, I want to very quickly tell a short story about my partner, Janet Atwood's Passion Test. My partner, Janet Atwood, wrote the book called The Passion Test, Discovering Your Personal Secrets to Living a Life on Fire. And in that book, Janet tells the story of how when she first discovered her passion to be a speaker, that she was inspired by a woman named Deborah Poneman who was teaching a course called Yes to Success. And Janet decided that she absolutely had to work with Deborah in one way or another, and she thought, the best way I can do it is to follow Deborah around the country, to go to every speaking engagement that she has and sit right there in the front row until she knows that I'm here and that there's no way that she's going to lose me, that she might as well hire me because otherwise I'll just be following around the country. And Janet got so clear on this intention of hers that she went to the local meditation center one night, and she told a friend about this and told her how excited she was that she had finally really gotten clear on her passions. The next day, she went back again to the same meditation center, and she saw her friend, and her friend opened up her purse, took out 10 $100 bills, and showered them on Janet and said, Merry Christmas, because the only thing that had stood in the way from Janet fulfilling her dream was how she was going to pay for the airplane tickets to get from place to place. She had no intention when she told her friend the story that money would come to her, and yet it did. And so miracles do happen when we are living our passions. And tonight, I am so pleased and excited to introduce to you a man who has created miracles in the lives of thousands, literally tens of thousands and millions of people worldwide. Jim Rohn is someone who many consider America's foremost business philosopher. He's been sharing his success philosophies and principles for over 40 years with over 6,000 audiences and over 4 million people worldwide. Jim is the recipient of the coveted CPAE Award for Excellence in Speaking, as well as the 2004 recipient of the Masters of Influence Award from the National Speakers Association. He's authored over 25 books, audio and video programs, and he's been hailed as one of the most influential thinkers of our time. Jim has helped to motivate and train an entire generation of personal development trainers, as well as hundreds of executives from America's top corporations. And he's been described as everything from a master motivator by Mark Victor Hansen, a national treasure by Vic Conant, one of the most profound thinkers and mind-expanding individuals of our time by Les Brown, one of the most articulate, powerful, thought-provoking speakers ever seen by Harvey McKay, an extraordinary human being and mentor by Anthony Robbins, and a modern-day Will Rogers by Tom Hopkins, as well as a legend, a true legend by Nito Kubine. And tonight I am so pleased and happy to also introduce to you my co-host for this evening who will be conducting the interview with Jim. Chris Widener has written over 350 articles and 5 books and has produced close to 30 audio programs. His best-known book, The Angel Inside, is a bestseller, and his programs on leadership and motivation have inspired thousands and thousands of people. I encourage all of you to learn more about Chris's work by going to Chris Widener, W-I-D as in Dorothy, E-N as in Nancy, E-R.com, And this evening, Chris, are you there?
I am. I'm right here, Chris.
Chris, thank you so much for being with us. And now I'm going to turn it over to you to greet our guest tonight and conduct the interview with Jim.
Great. Appreciate it very much. Hey, Jim, are you with us tonight?
Hey, Chris and Chris, thank you very much.
Yeah, you in California this evening?
I'm at home in Beverly Hills.
Wow, wonderful. Well, I'm at home in Seattle, and it's so fantastic just to hear all the different people coming in from all over the world, New Zealand, the Czech Republic, Germany, Sweden. I think somebody even called in from New Jersey, I heard, which that's kind of fun. But it really, I think, tells us a lot about the amount of influence that you've built over the last 40 years to have people calling in from all over the world, getting up in the middle of the night to hear what you have to say, Jim. And so that's really amazing. You know, you've been at the top of your field, the speaking business, but also the businesses that you run and you own and that type of thing for 4 decades. And you've inspired and motivated many of the leading teachers and authors in the world today. In fact, I was at that event when you won the 2004 Masters of Influence Award down at the National Speakers Association. I remember very distinctly they asked, how many of you would say you've been significantly influenced by Jim Rohn's teachings over the years? And in a room filled with about 2,500 people, nearly two-thirds of the room raised their hands. And that was such a testament to the teachings that you've given and now are being further taken out into the world by so many professional speakers. So you obviously are one of the great leaders of our generation. And as we talk about passions tonight, we'd like to ask, what role have your own passions, the things which are most important in your own life, played in getting to where you are today as a leader in this field?
Well, it started, you know, a long time ago with my parents. I grew up in southwest Idaho, where I still have the old family farm, and overlooking the Snake River, where I make a little wine, grow a few crops, you know, live the good life. But they were an incredibly important influence in my life. And I guess the spirit to do well, the spirit for accomplishment, those strong feelings to excel, to learn, to grow, to change, really started there with my mother and my father. They laid an incredible foundation of spirituality, the teachings that they, you know, shared with me along with my early schooling, I guess really laid the foundation.
Now, when you talk about kind of what the passions were early on, you named a couple of different things, and people will talk about being money motivated, or, you know, some people are driven to achieve fame or accomplishment. What were some of those things early on in your life that you said, this is something that I really, you know, I'm passionate about and I want to achieve?
Well, I guess early on in school it was, you know, sports and music. You know, I played a little basketball, I played football, then music, all those things really inspired me. You know, I wanted to be, you know, the best of the best. And, you know, sports can do that, you know, capture your attention, team play as well as, you know, personal achievement. So a lot of that started with my parents, my early schooling. I really enjoyed high school. I only went to 1.5 years of college. I made sort of the foolish decision after 1.5 years that, hey, I'm smart enough to get a job. How much smarter do I need to be? So with that rather limited intelligence, I quit school and got a job a little while later, got married, and, you know, started my family in like the normal average, you know, American family. We worked hard to try to make the best and to make things go.
Yeah. So tell us how your career started. And you know, you had a couple of careers, and they segue in together and that type of thing. So how did this whole thing take place 40, 45 years ago?
Well, I'm it was actually 50 years ago, 1955. Mm. You know, I'm working hard, and things just aren't all coming together. Once in a while, a creditor calls saying, you told us the check was in the mail. I'm embarrassed by that. I want to do much better. And then I think the climax of it all was I was at home alone one day and heard a knock on the door, and I went to the door. There was a little Girl Scout selling Girl Scout cookies. She put the big story on me, best organization for girls in the world. We've got these cookies for sale, only $2. And with a big smile, she very politely asked me to buy. No problem, I wanted to buy. Big problem. I didn't have $2 in my pocket. And I didn't want to tell her that. I'm a grown man. I live in America. I've been to 1 year of college. I've got a little family going. So I thought next best, I lied to her. And I said, hey, look, we've already bought lots of Girl Scout cookies. We've still got plenty in the house we haven't eaten yet. And she said, well, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. And she walks away. When she leaves, I say to myself, I don't want to live like this anymore. I mean, how low can you get, right? Lying to a Girl Scout. That's about as low as it gets. I promised myself that day that I would start a never-ending search until I found, you know, opportunity and people to help me grow and change and develop. And that experience radically changed my life. I called it the day that turns your life around. When something happens and you say, I don't want to live anymore with just pennies in my pocket and nothing in the bank, embarrassed by my situation. I was always willing to work hard, and I was a pretty nice guy, but, you know, that just doesn't always do it. And sure enough, age 25, I found this extraordinary mentor. He invited me to go to work for him. I spent the next 6 years in his employ. And he was the one that got me started on personal development, developing skills and disciplines and all those good things that changed my life. 6 years after I met him, I was a millionaire, but that was just the money part of it. The greatest part of that six-year journey was the personal development, the changes that I made in my concepts, my philosophies, the disciplines that I picked up, the skills that I learned, managing time, managing money, all those things were for me during that 6 years an accelerated program that just literally made an incredible impact on my life. So I made my first fortune, and where would you move if you made your first fortune if you were raised in the farm country of Idaho, but to where I live now in Beverly Hills?
Yep.
So I get to Beverly Hills, and one of my friends says, why don't you come to my service club? You belong to the Rotary. And, you know, I think they'd love to hear your story. How does an Idaho farm boy make it to Beverly Hills? He said, if I arrange this luncheon meeting, would you come and make a little presentation? I said, sure. So I went and made this talk, about 30, 35 minutes. Evidently, they liked it, because by the time the day was finished, I had two, three more calls saying, you've got to come and tell, you know, our club that story. So that started me on a whole brand new adventure, which was, you know, telling my story, sharing ideas that might help others by using my own experience. And that started about 45 years ago.
Wow. And you're still going strong. In fact, last year, 2004, how many countries did you go to last year?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Probably 24, 25.
Wow.
That's, I just finished a tour of 7 countries in 21 days.
Wow. That's
amazing. And I just celebrated birthday number 75.
Yeah. Finishing strong. You're still going. You're not even ready to finish. You just keep on going.
I got a long ways to go. My father lived to be 93.
Yeah.
So I'm really trying to break his record.
There are speakers half your age that didn't do, they didn't do 7 countries in 21 days, let alone.
No, but thanks to my mom. My mom was a health fanatic. In fact, she extended her life about 10 years, maybe 20, by, you know, studying and practicing all the good health stuff. I was an only child. Some of the stuff she mixed up for my father and I was pretty hard to take, but she used to say, if this doesn't kill us, I think it'll help, you know, and we're gagging down all this stuff. But that early training on taking care of myself, good nutrition, has really helped me. Develop, you know, good, strong constitution and my current ability to travel the world and tell my story.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your mentor, Mr. Schoaf. What were a couple of the, I mean, obviously, you've shared so many Schoaf-isms over the years, but what are one or two that just really stuck out as the pivotal ones for you that turned your life around and set you on the course for fulfilling your passion? Any of them strike you as really monumental?
One of the big ones that I've taught in Russia over the last 11, 12 years, I've made about 5-6 trips to Russia teaching capitalism. And the one that made my fortune, he said, profits are better than wages. Wages make you a living, which is fine. Profits can make you a fortune, which is super fine. That one changed my life. Hmm. Then the big one, I think, he said, the greatest value in life is not what you get. The greatest value in life is what you become. That was one of the big ones. But then he always attached it to economics. And as a young man, I'm 25 years old, and he said, why don't you set a goal to become a millionaire? This is America, you know, all things are possible here. And he said, set a goal to become a millionaire. And then he added this, and it was life-changing for me. For what it will make of you to achieve it. I have never heard it put like that before. Then he said, once you've made your million, you could give it away, because the greatest value is not what you get, but what you become. But set those goals that really help to, you know, utilize all of your energy and power and direction, zeroing in, focus, attention, and see not only what you can accomplish, but in the strive for accomplishment, see what you can get out of it in terms of personal development, learning skills, becoming a person of dignity and power, influence, wealthy, you know, a person who gives and shares. So I went for that. I thought it was just a unique way of putting a simple philosophy that for me turned out to be incredibly unique.
Yeah. Now there is the old saying that you've heard before, in this life you will have troubles.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you've been so successful, and I think sometimes people can look at a person like Jim Rohn and say, oh, he's so great and he's so successful and wealthy and has it all. But what they fail to see about people like yourself who are such high achievers and so successful is all of the hard obstacles that everybody has to go through. What have been some of the obstacles or challenges over the course of your career that you had to face and overcome? And how did you do it?
Part of it was, you know, I became, you know, rich a little bit early, which was like 31, 32, and then it all went away. I, you know, if a young man starts saying this when he goes shopping and he's looking at a, you know, a piece of clothing or something and says, how many colors does it come in? I'll take them all. You know, he's not going to have his money very long. I started making unwise decisions. One, especially in economics, that company wanted to borrow some money, $250,000, which back then was, you know, a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
The bank said, we'd be happy to loan the company the money if Mr. Rohn will sign personally. No problem. These were friends of mine. I knew they could pay it all back, so I signed. Sure enough, they paid all the money back. Then I happened to leave the area, and they went back to the bank a little later, borrowed that $250,000 again. And I heard about it, and I said, well, I hope the bank doesn't call me, because this time I won't sign, because I know they're not going to make it. Sure enough, they don't make it, but I get this letter from the bank saying, dear Mr. Rohn, since we have here your personal guarantee, and the company now cannot perform, would you send us this $250,000? And I said, hey, there's been some mistake. I did sign the first note. When they went back to borrow again, I never got a letter. They never called me. I never signed the second note. So it's a mistake. Thank you very much. What I didn't realize, though, they pointed out that originally I signed a continuing guarantee.
Ah.
So now I know what the word continuing means. In fact, I know how much it costs per letter. But anyway, that was, you know, flying high and then falling out of the sky you know, starting back again. But, you know, I made it all back in much less time than I did the first time.
Sure.
And I've made my share of fortunes, you know, since then. But that's one of them, you know, to lose it all. And, you know, it wasn't all that much, but, you know, it was all I had. You know, that's when it's that much.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, fortune reverses, you know, getting in over your head. You know, I've made some decisions that, you know, I thought were going to work out, overwhelm me. Then I learned a valuable lesson from Neil Armstrong, first man on the moon. He said, you know, going to the moon is just a couple of simple problems to solve. I thought, well, that's interesting. He said, problem number one, how to get there. Then he said, problem number two, how to get back. And I thought, well, that makes good sense.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, the wise thing to do is to understand not to leave until you've solved both problems.
Right.
So there was, along my career, you know, I'm an entrepreneur primarily. I didn't start out to be a speaker until I came back to Beverly Hills and they started asking me to make these talks.
Mm-hmm.
That started it all. So I'm primarily an entrepreneur, but, you know, in those early days before I learned this lesson, you know, I figured out how to get in, but I got in too fast and hadn't figured out how to get out. So I've had my share of those, all the way from building homes to, you know, raising crops to you name it. So that's really my life as being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But as you know, I've enjoyed this career since it started back there 45 years ago, sharing ideas that make such an incredible difference in people's lives. So one of the greatest returns for me, as well as fortune, that, of course, aside, is an experience all of us can really have. But I've enjoyed it so much all these years, is when your name appears in somebody's testimony.
Yeah.
I guess that became a passion of mine. When someone says, here's the person that found me, here's the person that got me started, here's the person that wouldn't let me quit, here's the person that gave me more reasons for staying and for leaving, here's the person who believed in me until I could believe in myself, and then they mention your name. As you know, Chris, there just isn't a much better feeling, because you can't buy it with money. It's something you have to earn by sharing your life experience and seeing what it can do for another human being.
Mm-hmm. And I can testify to how many people look at you that way, because I'll be out and about doing my business, and I'll mention that you and I have done some things together, the weekend event and our upcoming book, and they always give testimonial to you. They say, oh, Jim Rohn, you know, I love him. I've been listening to, and they'll name one tape series or one book or whatever. So you're definitely achieving the lasting legacy part.
You know, also part of it is really a chance in the things we do, right, sharing idea, whether it's from the podium or from books or tapes or videos, is a chance to have a bit of immortality after we're gone. I've got this vision of someone after I'm gone up in, you know, the attic of an old home going through a box of old dusty books. And there's one of my books. Sure
yeah.
enough, they dust it off and they read it and maybe use it as a guideline to teach others. And sure enough, so after I'm gone, the words I've said that got printed, that got recorded, may benefit someone, I'm sure, on and on, years to come. Someone once said an idea never dies. Even after you're gone, it lives on in somebody else. One person tells 10, those 10 tell 1,000. So no telling how many people can be directly and indirectly influenced if you'll just take the time to share. And you don't have to give lectures and seminars for it to happen. If you recommended a book to someone you care about on a Tuesday morning at Denny's, and years later someone might say to a person, wow, you've got some success going, when did it all start? And say, strange you should ask, a few years ago, on a Tuesday morning, I was having breakfast at Denny's with this friend of mine. He recommended this book, said it really benefited his life. I got the book. That started me on a brand new journey. And here's part of the reason for all of this success today. So it's not like you have to give big seminars or talk to 1,000 people to affect somebody's life. Just pass along something valuable at breakfast at Denny's on a Tuesday morning.
Yeah, and one of the things that has always amazed me about you, Jim, is, you know, speakers come and go. And I think when the National Speakers Association first started, there was 25 original members, and now there's about nearly 5,000. And people are out there and generating ideas, and all ideas are good, or most ideas are good. And yet, one of the things about yourself and a few others is you talk in what I would call timeless truths, rather than maybe the opposite would be vogue content, things that come and go. But the things that you say are what would be called timeless truth from generation to generation.
I got it in such a simple manner. The guy who you mentioned who affected the life, by the way, both of us were students of his, and that was Mary Kay.
Mm-hmm.
I met Mary Kay back there all those years ago. We were both inspired by the same person. And this man, Mr. Shope, only went to the ninth grade in school. So the things he shared were so simple, so basic, so non-technical, you know, so straightforward, from the heart. Best he knew, he said, here's what it seems to me that I figured out, and it's worked. And then he shared it. Sure enough, it was so simple, so easy, so clear that I tried to share it, you know, with my seminars, lectures, books, and all the rest in the same manner to make it ABC simple, clear, that anybody can understand.
Yeah. You talk about reaping what you sow. You reap what you sow. And then you say you reap more than what you sow.
Yeah, you don't reap what you sow.
Yeah, you reap even more than that.
Yeah.
And those are just simple, you know, thousands of years old. And yet we get so caught up in these new things that if we'd simply revert, it seems to me like one of the greatness of your mission is you teach people, let's revert to the things that we know are true, the basics.
Then I think the platform I come from is saying things like this, it seems like, rather than trying to be an authority.
Yeah.
It seems like opposites are in conflict and we are in the middle. Tyranny is trying to overcome liberty and illness is trying to overcome health. If you work on your health plan, you can overcome the illness. Darkness is trying to overcome light. Death is trying to overcome life. You know, negative is trying to overcome positive. There's a push-shove match going on. And we're in the middle of this whole drama. And the key is to learn how to develop a philosophy so you can minimize the dangers, maximize the opportunity, drive the darkness away, turn on the light, work on your health plan until your health plan drives your illnesses into a small corner. For a big share of our lifetime, the world was dominated by tyranny. Now it's turned. Since 15 years ago, the walls came tumbling down in Germany, and now there's more liberty than tyranny. It's an extraordinary thing to read and to watch during the course of our lifetime, these opposites in conflict. And the key to living an extraordinarily good life is to see if you can't manage to work so in harmony with the positive side, working on your health plan to defeat illness, working on light and education to defeat the darkness and the ignorance, working on liberty to defeat tyranny. That's the game of life, whether it's a nation that does it, a group that does it, a company that does it, an individual that does it, or a family that does it. And I'm just so involved in that idea that I love to teach it in such a manner that people says, I see, that really is the game. Opposites are in conflict and we're in the middle. And then the question is asked, why is it that way? And I think the best answer I've got is, it's the only way to create a drama, the great drama of life. And that's it.
Describe that drama a little bit more. What do you mean by that, to create that drama?
Well, let's say you put a football under your arm today, and we followed you out the nearest football stadium, and you walk across the goal line. Would we cheer and call it a touchdown?
Yep.
And the answer is no. It's not a touchdown, Chris, until you face the 300-pounders.
Ah, gotcha.
Right?
Yep.
Who want to smash your face in the turf. And if you can muscle by them and dance by the secondary and cross the goal line with the football under your arm, now we all cheer and call it a touchdown, and maybe you won the championship. But not without the contest. You know, in the beginning, one writer said it was God and Satan, God and Lucifer, created this great drama. Lucifer went for God's throne, didn't make it, took a third of the angels with him, they didn't make it, got thrown out. It's called the highest drama of all. But in this contest here on Earth, it seems that is the drama. It's to minimize the dangers, minimize the negative, maximize the positive, so that within this struggle, within this hard work, that's what the 6 days are for out of the seven, is to work on this struggle, to gain good health, to gain success over failure, to gain life over death. Death seems to want to move in prematurely. And if you want to live a long time, you got to push back, do your exercises, I got to do it all. To stay healthy at 75 and travel the world, I got to go through all the stuff you can possibly imagine. But then there's that little voice I heard this morning, Chris, that said to me, you don't have to do your exercises this morning. You're running a little bit late. You can make up for it tomorrow. And one more time, I had to resist this little voice on the negative side and fall on the floor and do the crunches and the push-ups and then the jogging and the fast walk and all the rest of it. And then paying attention to my diet every bit of the day today. And unless you do that, right, you're going to lose ground. And illness is going to encroach unless you work on your health plan. So that's the key. And fortunately, we've got everything good working for us if we work with it. In your bloodstream, there's, you know, red corpuscles to nourish like a mother and white corpuscles to fight and kill like a father. White corpuscles say it's my job to keep you alive and fight infection and kill it every time I see it. We say thank you very much. Then the red corpuscles, like a mother, nourish and give life. So that struggle goes on, whether it's in your bloodstream or whether it's in life. I'm teaching now, you know, capitalism in Russia. They were dominated all their lives, except the last 15, by, you know, communism and their philosophy. The communists said capital belongs to the state, not the people. We've been saying capital belongs to the people, not the state. The communists thought, no, people are too dumb and stupid to know what to do with capital. Got to take away from all the people. Give it to the state. Let the state run everything. It was an evil society. Not the people, but the government. And, you know, now they're learning that if you invest time and money as capital in an enterprise that brings value to the marketplace, you can change your life of those around you. Pick up the philosophy of John Kennedy, who said, don't ask what your country can do for you. This is new stuff for the Russians. But ask, what could I do for my country? Instead of working for the state, what now could I develop as an enterprise that brings value, maybe to my family, maybe to my neighbors, maybe it grows big enough to bring value to my country, thereby make my fortune. All those ideas are so classic that we've enjoyed all of our lifetime, but they've only enjoyed for the last 15 years.
Sure.
But it's fun to teach it, and it's fun to watch people grab a hold of an idea like profits are better than wages and go make your fortune. Then there's another one that Chill said, formal education gets you a job, self-education gets you rich. I thought, wow, that's it. I didn't have all that much formal education. He said, you can make up for that swiftly by engaging now in what we call self-education. Learn as you go. Every seminar, take notes. You know, do your best to learn in an accelerated manner, and you can change your life forever. Anyway, didn't mean to get off on all that.
No, no, it's great. You just, all of these things just generate ideas, and the ideas that flow out of the ideas, and, you know, I can hear people's minds just racing and flying to their own lives and all of that. Well, let's talk a little bit about personal mission. In order to be successful in life and in order for you to have achieved all that you've achieved over the years, a person has to be mission-oriented. How would you describe your own personal mission?
Well, I think I would share with everybody a little phrase, and I'll give them time to write it down and memorize it, because I'm doing that now in all my seminars across the country. And this is the ultimate for me, and the phrase goes like this. From testimonials and personal experience, we have enough information to conclude that it's possible to design and live an extraordinary life. So let me repeat that. From testimonials and personal experience, we have enough information to conclude that it's possible to design and live an extraordinary life. If you would remember that for the rest of your life, I think it would serve you well. And I think that is the ultimate passion, is to design and live an extraordinary life. Because this is it, you know, this is not a practice session. You know, this is it, the life we've got, however many years there are. But I think that's it. To design and live an extraordinary life. Yes, you could live an ordinary life and get by. Yes, you could pay the bills and feel good about yourself. But why not, you know, ask to be challenged, to be inspired, to live an extraordinary life.
And that goes across industry. I mean, some people want to do it in sporting, and some people want to do it in aeronautics, and it doesn't matter. That's the general principle, right? That they can be extraordinary in whatever they're passionate about.
You know, the goal that Andrew Carnegie had, that we've all been inspired by. Andrew Carnegie said, I'm going to spend the first half of my life accumulating money, earning and accumulating money, and the last half of my life, I'm going to give it all away. And the first half of his life, he accumulated about $400 million. Building deal industry, which back then was a lot of money. Guess what he did the last half of his life? He gave it all away. I don't think you could illustrate a more passionate, exciting, substance, powerful life than that goal.
Yeah.
You know, the first requisite for life is to survive. You know, a man must make enough to take care of himself. Second, if he wants to live a better life, he gets married. Now he must produce enough to take care of himself and his wife. Someone says, well, why do that? And the answer is very simple, to live a more extraordinary life. Yes, you could get by just taking care of yourself. Why not pick up the other chapter, relationship, camaraderie? Then the man has children. Now he must produce enough for himself and for his whole family. And someone says, well, why do that? Why not just take care of yourself? And the answer is, if you want to live a higher, 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 more extraordinary life, just take on the responsibility and go do it. Now he decides to earn more than he needs for himself and for his family. And someone says, well, why go off the scale here? Why do that? And the answer is so that he can share. There's nothing like a life of sharing. Then maybe he concludes to earn much more than he needs for himself and for his family. Someone says, well, now that's getting to be ridiculous. You know, I mean, why do all that? And the answer, of course, is very simple, to live even a more extraordinary life. And I think probably the ultimate is, if he decides to earn far more than he needs for himself and for his family, so that he can actually probably give more than he spends. And someone says, well, now that is really totally ridiculous. Why go that far? And the best answer, as you and I know, Chris, is why not? You know, if you're inspired by that, why not go do it? Let's say this year you earn $10 million and you and your family only need three. You know, some families are more expensive than others, but let's say three would pretty well cover it. Now you've got $7 million to give and to share. Someone says, well, why work that hard? Why produce that much? You know, why go that far? And the answer is, why not? It's all there. It's all available. Living an abundant, extraordinary, powerful, influential, unique life. And I've said all these years, you know, why settle for less? Why not see what all you can accomplish and do before time, you know, finally runs out?
And it sounds like what you're saying is that our mission expands as we go through life. What we can imagine for our life, most of us, at age 20, is by the time we're 30 or 35, 40, however the stages progress to our life, we may have achieved it, and we need to constantly be expanding our mission in life.
Yeah, you can't get it all that first year, second year, third year, 10th year of your working life. They say some of the big fortunes in life were made after the person turned 50, 55, 60. Because now suddenly something drops into their consciousness, something to do, something that, you know, sets them on fire. And now with 45, 50 years of experience, now they invest that not in retirement, but in accomplishment. And now the results and the productivity can be so extraordinary. And what I'm saying, I think, in all my seminars is give yourself a chance, you know, to do much more than what you've done the last 5 years. Give yourself a chance to invest the experience of the last five into the next five. And that's what I did at age 25, when I met my teacher. I started that process. I'd been working for 6 years. I quit school when I was 19. And my mentor said, why not utilize the experience of the last 6 years and invest it in the next six? And that's exactly what I did. In the next six, I became a millionaire. And that was only the money. The best part of it was the personal development, the skills, actually that laid the foundation for, you know, my current career of lecturing and sharing my story around the world. And I think that's a good idea. I'm using it now as a as part of that seventh day experience. You know, the seventh day is to you know, rest and for spirituality and for church and synagogue and for friends and family and, you know, get away and whatever. But I like to think of that seventh day as multi-purpose. And part of the multi-purpose of the seventh day is to look back over the last 6 days. Who didn't you call? What did you miss? What did you leave undone? What should you have done? And then refine all of that and invest that overlook of the last 6 days, invest in the next six. And now after the time with friends and rest and religion and prayer and whatever else you do on that seventh day, now invest all of that in the next 6 days of working miracles and building cities and making fortune and, you know, conquering disease and, you know, building an orphanage and advancing your career and all of those things. Review always helps us to refine a bit of error in our judgment, mistakes we've made that if we correct more quickly, we can really utilize that information in helping to build our future.
Now, Jim, what about somebody who says, I just don't know what my mission is in life or my purpose is in life? How does somebody discover that or unveil it to themselves?
Well, I think at first it is simply to do the best job you possibly can. You couldn't have anything, you know, better. If you've been blessed with some kind of a job that feeds your family, it doesn't matter how modest it is. Because, as you know, I teach income is determined not by the economy, but by your philosophy. Here's a guy making $5 an hour, wants to go to $6. How can he do that? Number one is wait for the government to change the minimum wage. The guy says, yeah, but how long will that take? And the answer is longer than you probably want to wait.
Yeah.
Second philosophy is to wait for the company to pay you $6. The guy says, how long will that take? Well, if you missed the review the first year, maybe a couple of years. The guy says, wow, 2 years to go to $6. What's the third philosophy? And the third philosophy is go on strike and say, I refuse to work if you don't pay me $6. And, you know, the philosophy of demand works, but you got to have 1,000 people that goes to the company. All by yourself, it doesn't work. And you can't get rich using the philosophy of demand. If 1,000 went to the company and said, we refuse to work, if we don't get the $6, you might get the $6. Or maybe a benefit, or maybe a few extra pennies. But you can't become wealthy. So someone says, well, what is the wealth formula? Here's where it begins. When someone says, I'm only making $5 an hour, but I will get there early, I will stay late, I will work so hard, I'll do all the extra things that are not even required, and I will do my job so incredibly well that the company very quickly will be happy to pay me $6. That's the beginning of a passionate philosophy of performance and productivity, that if you use it just in the beginning, right where you are at the moment, it will serve you for the rest of your life. Because here's the philosophy that kills. If I had a better job, I'd get there early. You know, if they paid me more money, I would do a better job. The key is, no, if you did a better job, they would pay you more money. It's that whole mindset that if you can get it early, and if you can use it in everything, I'll make the very best of this day. So by the time the day is finished, my children will be dazzled and my grandchildren will be out of sight with this day that I've created. I became a grandfather about 18 years ago, and I have decided way back then to become a 5-star super grandfather. And I've done everything I can imagine to dazzle and make happy my grandchildren, who are now 17 and 18. It's an extraordinary commitment, not waiting for the grand passion of something to fall out of the sky, but to make it a passion to make this day better than yesterday, to make this year better than last year. Start with your job. Start with where you work. The best way out, if you're in an unfortunate, tough job situation, is to do it so well, you'll attract somebody's attention outside, and they'll invite you on a new journey. That's the key.
Let's talk a little bit more about passion and being clear about it. In her book, The Passion Test, Janet Atwood says, when you are clear, what you want will begin to show up in your life, and only to the extent you are clear. So how important is clarity, and how can our listeners gain more clarity about the things which will bring them more fulfillment? How do you get clear about what you're passionate about?
Well, I think at first it's clear that, you know, if you've got a family you need support them, that you need to do your job as well as you possibly can. You know, that's clear. If it's a foggy night and you can only see 100 feet, the key is if you walk that 100 feet, you can see another 100 feet. You can't see all the way down the road. But if you just walk what you can see and do the things you should, if you should be reading, you've got to read. If you should get up a little earlier, you must get up a little earlier. If you've neglected your health plan, you need to correct it. You know, if your relationship is in disrepair, you got to get busy and take care of that. There are some things that are just obviously clear that there's no use me skipping over. There's no use me hoping for a light to shine out of the sky. If it's clear that I ought to do certain things today to make my life more worthwhile, then I ought to do that. If it's obvious that I should take care of my responsibilities this month, not only where I work, but at home, my friendship, my relationship. If there's some things I should do, then I should do those things. And if you'll do those things, you know, you'll better understand how to do them better as the months progress and as the years progress. The thing is to do what's obvious to you to do today. Now, sometimes by education, when I met Mr. Shope, age 25, those things he shared with me just opened my eyes, opened my understanding. I had never heard it before. I'd never seen it that way before. I told him, you know, things cost too much. He said, no, you can't afford them. I mean, just stuff that, you know, cleared up for me. You know, I was hoping. He said, well, the future doesn't get better by hope. It gets better by work. You must employ the 6 days of miracle working power and go to work those 6 days so that on the seventh you can celebrate, do some review, and then go for the next six.
Yeah.
So that's really the key. Celebrate work and life and say it's pretty clear what I ought to do now. And if I don't do that, I can't expect, you know, any more clarity to come if I don't do what I know I should do today.
You used a word a little bit back where you used the word obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it really true that the first thing we should start with is the obvious?
Yeah.
And don't we have a tendency to want to skip the obvious? And, you know, people who need to lose weight, rather than just cutting back on calories, they want to go on a, you know, the latest Vogue diet or whatever. Why do you suppose that is, that we're always trying to skip the obvious?
Well, we're always tempted. I saw a cartoon years and years ago of a little boy, looked like he was about 12 years old. He had a little devil on one shoulder and a little angel on the other shoulder. That's the game of life. The little devil said to the little boy, go ahead and do it, it'll be okay. Little angel says, no, 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 it won't be okay. Remember what you've learned. Little devil said, yes, go ahead. And the little angel says, no, no, no. There's an interesting story in the Bible. Here's what it says. There were two nice people. This is an extraordinary story from the storyteller of two nice people. Not one bad, one good. And the storyteller says, however, and so begins the fantastic drama of life. When the storyteller says, however, one built his house on the rock, and the other built his house on the sand. Two nice people. And right away, with just those two sentences, we've already got the story. Because it says the storms came as they always do, not to think so is naive, and the one that built his house on the rock was saved, and the one that built his house on the sand was lost. So here's the key. I think the illustration simply means it's possible for nice people to make foolish decisions. It's possible for nice people to make careless decisions. Careless decisions about their health, careless decisions about their employment, careless decisions about their relationships. It is not that difficult, Chris, to get off track. You know, when the early astronauts went to the moon, on the way to the moon, they had what they called mid-course corrections. where they had to look closely at the gauges, see if maybe some solar wind had pushed them off course. Then they had these little rockets that they would fire in order to get back on course. And that's the game of life. And if, especially if you're headed for the moon, you got to be on course because you can't miss the moon. If you miss the moon, you can't get back.
Some you're in trouble.
Are critical. So that's the key. Here's a good phrase for you. Everything by longevity tends to get off course. The longer something goes, the more it has a tendency to, you know, get off to the left, off to the right. Whether it's your own daily health program, you know, that you overindulge today or you skip an exercise tomorrow, all of that, we should have early signals somehow that we don't linger too long off track, but get back on track. They say if you survive your first heart attack, you may now live to be a very old person, if you survive. Because that first heart attack, if you survive, was a wake-up call. And maybe the doctor said, one more of these, and your history is over. And the man says, wow. And he makes it to the health food store. He starts reading all these books. He goes jogging on the beach. He does the exercises. He now starts watching his diet. And those radical changes in his life get him back on track. And sure enough, he may now live to be a very old person. So that's the game of life. You know, we're all bound to get off track, whether it's conversation and we let our temper fly. All of us, no matter who we are, in whatever, you know, situation in our life, it's not that difficult to get off track. But the key is to stay educated. Stay focused, like at the end of the day a few minutes, and like this seventh day, take a look. I just don't want my life to drift this week and then another week and another week. And because disaster doesn't fall at the end of the first week off track, we sometimes get disillusioned into thinking that it's okay when it's not okay. So the smart and wise person continually looks at all life systems and says, am I on track or off track? And then face the awesome truth. If I need to get back on track on my health, if I need to get back on track with my relationship with my children, if I need to get back on track with my career, my work, I've let it slide. You know, I've slipped away early this past week. I shouldn't do that. Here's a good one, Chris. I'm walking to go have breakfast at Nate and Al's here in Beverly Hills, where Larry King usually comes for breakfast, and all the other stars come and go. I'm going to get a newspaper out of the dispenser. A man is just ahead of me, puts in his two quarters, gets his newspaper, holds the door open and says to me, hey, help yourself. The newspaper company can certainly afford it. Guess what I said, and I don't know, maybe Mama was watching, maybe for whatever reason, and I think it reached all the way back to my childhood in growing up. Guess what I did? I declined.
Yeah.
The guy was stunned that I didn't reach in and take a free newspaper. I said, no, thank you. So he closed the door, and I put in my two quarters, got my newspaper, and went in and had breakfast. Because here's what I thought later. I wouldn't want my day to be disturbed by grabbing a free newspaper just for a couple of quarters.
Right.
To save a couple of quarters, Chris, it's not worth it. But guess how easy it is. It's that little devil that says, go ahead, and the little angel that says, no, no, no. And sometimes it's even more critical than that. A guy comes to the intersection, and some voice in his head, when the light turns red, says, go ahead, you're late, you can make it, you can make it. And now, Chris, the man is dead. He's dead, not because he was bad, but because a nice guy who loved his family was a good father in a critical moment of decision, instead of making the positive decision not to run the red light. He went ahead because this voice in his head said it's okay, and now he's dead. You don't have to go to Iraq and be a soldier to die. It's easy enough to die on the American highway. 35,000 people a year die on the American highway, and part of it's careless at the wrong moment. So good lessons, right?
Yeah.
You
so now,
gotta pay attention every day, stay on track, because the passion, first of all, is to is to, you know, design and live an extraordinary life. Then all of that in between that says, I want to make this day really a profitable day. I've got a chance to have a conversation with someone. I want to choose the best words I can. I've got a chance to give a seminar tomorrow. I want to make it my best seminar ever, so that at least some of the audience will walk out and say, wow, I think I'll use these ideas to change my life. If you have that concept, it really helps. Not that we all aren't pushed and shoved and pressed and enticed and, you know, voices in our head that have conflicting information to give us. We just do the best we can and live a better life. Here's a good one on this. Do not become a victim of yourself. You know, beware of the thief on the street that's after your purse, but then beware of the thief in your mind that's after your promise. Mm. You know, the thief that says, hey, you're too short, you're too tall, you're now too old, or you're too young, you've never done it before, what makes you think you can do it now? You've got to really win that game, Chris, of all that stuff, whether if some of it's from the outside that I got early, people said, hey, you're not going to make it, or those voices in your head. But if you can learn to play this game of defeating evil and developing good, work on your health plan, driving illness into a small corner, work on liberty so that it defeats tyranny, work on your temper so that it serves you and not destroy you. All of that stuff is a daily progression. But sure enough, if you do it well, you know, every couple of years you can look back and say, wow, what an extraordinary way to live.
Now, you've talked about getting off track and getting sidetracked. I want to talk just briefly about two things that don't necessarily get us off track, but they just stop us. One would be hitting a plateau, and the other would be fear, both of which don't necessarily get us off track. They just kind of stop us in our tracks. How do you go through a plateau stage? And then the follow-up question to that is another thing that stops us is, how do you get through fear? Whether you're just starting out or maybe you've hit a high level of success and you're fearful about moving forward anymore. What about those two things, hitting a plateau and facing fear?
I think my good fortune was I decided early not to do all this stuff by myself. Hmm. All of my enterprises since I started were all partnerships. I drew a phrase from the Bible that says, if two or three agree on a common purpose, nothing is impossible. Not two or 3,000, just two or three. So I reach out to partners. I reach out to a mentor. If something really has me, really scares me, really, you know, has me on the run, you know, I go to some people that have helped with counsel and have helped with reassurance all of my life. And here's a good one. Everybody needs to be reassured from the president on down. You know, somebody needs to say, George, it's going to be okay. I mean, it doesn't matter how high up you are. It doesn't matter what position you have or how wealthy you are. There are all of those times when we are shaken, either by what goes on in our head or by some tragedy that happens in our life, maybe a death in the family, maybe the announcement of an illness that it looks like you're going to have to really, you know, go to work on defeating. Whatever that is, it happens. Sometimes you just can't handle it by yourself. That's why it's important to develop good friends, good friendships, because that's a good support system. Now, sometimes you have to go away all alone, you know, and put your head between your legs, you know, really ponder what's going on and you know, ask for guidance and help to get through some tough things that might be fearful at the moment. But it's like my lesson of the season, Chris. Nothing lasts forever. You know, winter comes, but there's never been a double winter. Some winters are tough and some are easy and some are more difficult. But, you know, the night is only a few hours, right? Hang on, you can make it till the daylight comes and the shadows flee away and you've got another new day. That's part of it. You just have to sometimes wait till it passes. One of my heroes back when I was growing up was Mickey Mantle. And he used to go through these slumps. You know, he's a big home run king, one of the greatest players that ever lived. But he'd go through these slumps of striking out. And someone asked him one time, what do you do, Mickey, when you get in these terrible slumps? It just doesn't seem like it's working. He says, I hang in there till it's over. And sometimes that's all you can do, Chris, right?
Yeah.
Hang in there, just, you know, until it passes. And hopefully it's like a night that, you know, is only a few hours long, or a season that, you know, it won't last forever. But we all go through it, you know, whether it's from the outside or from the inside of those moments. But I've found, it's great comfort, family, close friends especially, that you trust sometimes with your inner insecurities at the moment or feelings that can help you through certain times in your life. I've got one mentor, I remember I was going through something, we were walking the beach, and I said, I think of all the people I know, I think you'll level with me, and you'll tell it like it is, like it really is. Because some others I think may won't tell me what they think I want to hear rather than, you know, really giving me the truth. And it's just great to have some of those kind of friends, people close by you can reach out to.
Yeah. You know, you talk about your partnerships and the teams that you work with. What are the secrets to having the most productive results from those kinds of relationships? How do you make those teams and partnerships the most successful that they can be?
Well, I think one is a common purpose, right? If two or three agree on a common purpose, nothing is impossible. And you keep the common purpose alive. You know, equal investment of time and effort, equal investment of ideas, information, commitment to the future. That's it. And then sometimes, if two or three are in on a project of 1 month, one is up and another one is down, you know, that's one of the advantages. Not likely that all three will be down at the same time. That's the advantage of, you know, not just being by yourself. I've never heard anyone that say, I'm going to go conquer the world. Here's the phrase you usually use, let's go conquer the world. Let's go do something extraordinary. The word let's is so powerful. Let's turn it upside down. Let's do better than anyone else has ever done. Let's make some records that will never be broken. Let's do something whose effect will last for a lifetime. I was invited by a young man 25 years ago. He said, let's travel the world. If we do it right, we can affect the lives of millions of people. And I took the journey. Let's go do it. Extraordinary. And if somebody gives you one of those invitations, you might consider it carefully because it could be the beginning of something, you know, extraordinary in your life and in your future. Then, you know, learn to, if you've got something valuable, say it yourself. You know, find somebody, and the two of you find number three, and maybe three of you find number four. And finally, you all commit and say, let's go do it. Let's roll up our sleeves. Let's move it up a few notches. You know, let's solve these problems. Let's get beyond it. That whole let's has such generating power that my personal opinion is you just don't want to miss it.
Well, I see that we're coming into the home stretch here, so we got a couple other questions that we want to cover.
Okay.
Here's the first. At Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, we believe strongly in the power of intention to manifest outcomes. What's your current most important project that you're working on, Jim, and what intention would you like us here at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, along with the readers and the listeners, to hold for you?
I'd like to make a positive contribution to the lives of a few more million people around the world. It's just a work I've done now all these years, now 50, if I consider those early years of my early business career where, you know, I brought people in, helped to inspire them in training and teaching. And I've done it now for so many years that I just want to continue to have the health and the refinement of language that keeps making it new and fresh all the time and affecting the lives of a lot more people before my time finally runs out.
Huh. That's great. Now, one of the things that the last question is a question that is similar to the question that I asked almost all of the people that I interviewed for the Jim Rohn 1 Year Success Plan. You know, at the end of every month, we
right.
would interview the great people, you know, Zig Ziglar and all those folks. And I always asked them a question they never knew was coming. And I'm going to ask you the same question. And that is, if you had one last speech that you got to give and there was 1,000 people in the audience, and you had maybe 1 or 2 or 3 minutes to say the most important thing to those people to make a difference in their life, that question that I asked those similar to this question, and that is, what's the one single thing you'd like to leave with the listeners tonight?
Well, actually, it's in two parts. The first is, success is something you attract by becoming an attractive person. The idea of personal development, it has served me so well all my life to get better at what I do, developing the skills. Then the last idea is to let all of that serve you well in designing this extraordinary life, especially with your children and your family and the inner circle. The drama is in the details. I give the story of, when my father was alive after my mother was gone. My father lived another 7-8 years. And while I was traveling, I used to try to call him while he was having breakfast at the farmer's little place called the Decoy Inn, southwest Idaho, overlooking Snake River. Just takes 5 minutes to make a special day. My son called me this morning from Israel. I know he had to get up in the middle of the night to make the call. I had visions of my father walking down the lane to the mailbox, opening it up. I've got to make sure it's not empty, even if it's only a postcard.
Yeah.
The drama is in detail. My father would save those postcards. And when I would come home from my travels, I'd get together with him. And he had all these postcards, and we'd go through them. And I would fill him in on the story that there wasn't enough room on the postcard to share.
Mm.
All those details, the inner circle. If you bless them, they will bless you. If you inspire them, they will inspire you. That's really what makes life worthwhile.
Well, Jim, thanks so much. Just, again, nugget after nugget after nugget of things that inspire and challenge and encourage people. And I want to say thanks on behalf of all the listeners. I know they don't get a chance to because they got the line muted, but thank you. And we're going to throw it back to Chris. I know he has a few more things that he'd like to talk about tonight as well. So, Chris, back to you.
Great. Thank you, Chris. And, Jim, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Chris, and thanks to everybody for taking the time to listen in. I always enjoy another chance to share. I wish you and all of your organization, the very best for today and the future.
Thank you so much, Jim. And, there's no doubt in my mind that you will fulfill that desire of yours to influence millions more people during the time that you're here, because you can't speak a word without inspiring and influencing people, in my experience. Thank you for that.
Thank you for that.
And for all of our listeners, you've gotten a little bit of taste of Jim Rohn tonight, and I want to encourage you to take the opportunity to get much deeper into the wealth of wisdom and knowledge that Jim has to offer. As a special gift to all of our listeners at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, that Jim's organization has provided a special discount on his 2004 weekend leadership event that was held last year with Jim and Dennis Waitley and Brian Tracy. Chris Widener, our co-host tonight, was the MC of that event. And in this package, you'll get 24 hours on DVD, 24 CDs, a comprehensive 283-page workbook to put in practice some of these ideas and concepts that Jim's been talking about. So go and check that out. Go to Healthy, Wealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/Rohn, R-O-H-N is in Nancy. Again, Healthy, Wealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/Rohn, R-O-H-N. And tonight listening to Jim, I was inspired and impressed by everything that Jim had to say, and there were a few things that really stood out for me. One was this idea of increase the light in your life. I just love that concept, that when we focus on increasing the light in our life, then the darkness automatically disappears, doesn't it? Because all you have to do for the darkness to go away is just turn on the light. So increase the light in your life. And then I love this idea of the contest between opposites creates the drama in life. And it creates the feelings of joy, of fulfillment, of accomplishment. So, when we run up against these obstacles, those are the opportunities for us to really see who we are. And it's in those moments that we're able to connect with the deepest part of our being. I love this line, and for those of you that didn't get it, I'm going to say it one more, that Jim asked us all to write down. from testimonials and personal experience. We have enough information to conclude that it's possible to design and live an extraordinary life. And that's the opportunity that each of us has. That's the opportunity we have as we discover our passions and begin to live them, to design a truly extraordinary life. And in that context, I also love this point that Jim said, that you know, when it's not so clear, on a foggy night when you can only see 100 feet, then walk those 100 feet and then you can see another 100 feet and take the next step. Such powerful concepts. Again, these are just a few of the things, and I encourage all of you again to go to healthywealthyandwise.com, healthy, wealthy, the letter N, as nancywise.com/Rohn, R-O-H-N, and get more of Jim Rohn into your life. Increase the light in your life. Make it so deeply embedded in your life that darkness just has no place to be in your life. And as you do that, your passions will become clear, because what happens when you increase the light? Then you can see. Then you can see more. Then the clarity that Janet was talking about, then that becomes greater. That becomes fuller. So your opportunity tonight is to grasp hold of that and bring Jim Rohn into your life and into your home, and make these principles a part of everything that you do. So again, Jim and Chris, both, thank you so much for all of you that you shared with us tonight.
Pleasure.
Thanks. And in these next weeks, for all of you that are with us on a regular basis, I want to encourage you. In 2 weeks, we'll be interviewing Debbie Allen, the author of Confessions of Shameless Self-Promoters. This is an amazing book and an amazing message that Debbie has for any of us that are shy and timid about letting the world know who we are. And you will love how Debbie deals with that whole issue and how she shares from her own experience and how one actually expresses oneself out into the world, no matter how timid and shy we may be. On November 8th, we have the amazing speaker Les Brown, another award-winning speaker, the author of Live Your Dreams and It's Not Over Until You Win, his latest book. On November 22nd, we'll be interviewing David Ricklin from selfgrowth.com, one of the most visited websites on the internet in terms of personal development and personal growth. And then on December 6th, we're so happy in the month that is filled with holiday and celebration. We are so happy, pleased, that we will be interviewing Mike Love of the Beach Boys, one of the founding members of the Beach Boys, one of the author of the famous hits that the Beach Boys have had over the years. And that will be, I guarantee, an extraordinary interview. So thank you all again for being with us from all over the world. I'm going to open up the lines now so that we can all say goodnight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Thank you.